Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher. I'm a current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, we explore ideas and strategies. I tell stories, including my big epic fails that I've made along the way. I share blueprints and tools, because ultimately I believe that teachers are a critical factor in helping students reach their creative potential. And today we're going to be talking about something that I want to that harkens back a little bit to a series we did recently, which is it's all about reading. But it's mostly about this idea of voice and choice and the whole notion of student ownership. So I'm going to share 9 teacher-tested ways to build student ownership into informational reading. Now, when I first taught reading, I allowed students to choose novels during silent reading time. I made a huge deal out of the genres that were available. I asked students to develop a personal taste. I wanted to empower readers to own the learning process. They had an unlimited passport to go explore any fictional world they could find. And I did everything I could to expose them to these different worlds in different places and different genres and authors and styles. Sometimes they would abandon one world for another, and they would often jump from world to world, but they were explorers on their own expeditions. And silent reading was their chance to own this whole process. They were in the driver's seat. And yet, I didn't extend this process to informational texts. When it came to informational texts, my students were not explorers going off-road or astronauts finding an entirely new universe. They were tourists, and I was a tour guide. I decided where we went, how fast we went, what the process looked like. I would select a high-interest article, and we would read it together as a whole class. Often, I would read a section aloud to them and then ask them specific critical thinking questions. They would then read a section aloud to one another and follow this up with a prescribed close reading exercise that I required them to do. I had this whole color-coded process for underlining and circling and writing annotations. In the end, I would assess students with a series of critical thinking questions that they completed individually. This was a rigid reading ride. Fun? Perhaps. Entertaining? At times. But the thing is, I owned the entire process. You can think about it this way. There's the rigid reading ride on one side, the off-road reading on the other side. And when it came to the route that we took, the rigid side was all about pre-selecting the strategies ahead of time. It was about predictability. The destination was a prescribed curriculum with no choice in the topics. The questions were teacher-selected. The pace was that everyone moved through the same pace with the same frequent breaks. The process was determined and advanced by the curriculum that we were using, and the assessment was driven by me, the teacher. The tools were teacher-directed. I chose the accommodations and the scaffolds to guarantee that my students, the tourists, would have exactly what they needed. The off-road reading approach was different. When it came to the route, the students selected the strategies and the tools. They figured out where they were going and how they were doing it, which leads to the next idea. The destination was based on student interests, and they had lots of choices in the topic. The questions were crafted by the students instead of created by me, and they were often the result of student wonder and curiosity. The paces that students would move at different paces for longer stretches of time. It was less of this stop-and-go approach and more of a long, deep dive into the fiction that they were reading. And when it came to the process, students would select the strategies that worked best for them. When it came to assessment, as they were trying to figure out where to go and what to do, it was based on themselves. they were in the driver's seat asking, what do I do? Where do I go? What happens next? When it came to the tools, it was student-directed. Truthfully, I was afraid to take my students off-road. I was afraid that they would struggle too much and fall too far behind. I was worried about test scores, but also I was worried about letting go of some of the control that I had as the tour guide. I was worried that things would get too messy and chaotic, and sometimes they did. I learned the hard way that sometimes less choice is actually necessary in reading. Sometimes the rigid route is exactly what we need, because sometimes I know of a really important destination and we all need to get there together. There's nothing wrong with being a tour guide, but at some point we need students to leave the tour and go out into the world. There's something really powerful that happens as students take the reading off-road. They become empowered readers and critical thinkers. They develop key soft skills like critical thinking and curation and information literacy. As they explore new ideas and wrestle with nuance, they gain empathy with people who think differently from them. So what does it look like to empower students to go off-road in their reading? Here's where we're going to dive into the 9 teacher-tested ways that students can own the informational reading process. Now, these 9 ways are, some of these come from me, some of these come from my experience, some of these come from the research that I've done. Some of these, though, come from just talking to classroom teachers, current classroom teachers, former classroom teachers, and saying, what are you doing or what have you done to empower your students with voice and choice in informational reading? I want to point something out right here. None of these work perfectly all the time. I get it. Things are really, really hard. This year has been like no other year before, and we are all struggling in different ways. And even when we implement these strategies, there will be learning loss. There will be challenges. There will be struggles. Because there are things going on outside of our classrooms that we can't control. But I will say this, that when students are empowered to own this informational reading process, they do better. They learn more. They become more empowered. They get those key soft skills that they need. So here are the 9 ideas. Number 1, empower students to choose the topics. This is the first idea. This is the most basic way to start. You know, I always passed out articles and I was choosing the topic. But when I first took this tour guide approach, there was a clear split between the choice-based fiction that I did and then this teacher-directed nonfiction reading that I was doing. I trusted my students to choose stories, but I didn't trust them to choose their own topics. Now, this was odd given the fact that every student has some interest that they're into and that they're passionate about. They can find something information-wise that they should be able to nerd out on. If I had simply asked, what information do you want to find, or what are you into, or what do you want to read, or just what do you geek out on, I would have been able to help students fall in love with informational texts. Later, I encouraged my students to choose their own topics when they did geek out blogs. And this was a process that got them into choosing whatever topic that they want. Now there's, part of what makes it work is that the language arts standards are topic neutral, right? So if we think about language arts, you know, they're practicing key skills, they're learning key concepts, but they're not learning topics. By contrast, often in social studies and in science, for example, students do have to learn key topics. So the question is, how do we incorporate that into those other subjects where we might want students to engage in informational reading but still have some choice in the topics? Well, I think some of it is giving them some constraint but then letting them choose topics within it. So if you're incorporating informational reading into other content areas, you might have to use some of those constraints. You might cover historical methods standards that are very topic neutral, but tell them, you know, they can do a history blog on any topic that they want. They might do history of food, history of fashion, history of hair, right? History of video games. or a specific time period that they want to choose. They might want to do a blog or a video series and read up on the 60s or the 70s or the 90s. But you might also tell them, look, we're studying the Roaring Twenties. We're studying World War II. We're studying the Civil Rights Movement. And we want you to hone in on, you know, that area, but then choose whatever topic you want. So some students might want to read up on, say, women who fought in the Civil War, and that might be what they're into. Maybe you're learning about extreme weather, and they get to select whatever topic that they want within the topic of weather. So, and that would be, of course, in science. But yeah, that's the whole idea, is letting them choose the topic within the content area. Number two, empower students to set their own pace. The tourist approach requires everyone to stay together in a group, but off-road students can work at their own pace. And pace? I just said pace. They can work at their own pace. I'm picturing like the old school pace that we used to have. It was like glue, but it was, it always looked tasty and never tasted as good as I thought it would taste. But yeah, work at their own pace, not paste. Off-road students can work on their own pace. That's what I was trying to say. Some can blaze a trail quickly. Others take their time as they learn the new terrain. But nobody is left behind. It's not a race or a contest. It's an epic adventure that will look different from student to student. This was a challenging area for me when I taught middle school. If students could work at their own pace, wouldn't they just slow down and fail to get their work done entirely? I felt like I needed in-depth assignments to hold students accountable. And part of it is that it felt unfair to have them working at different paces. And then I realized that often in PE, they'll run at different paces, right? During silent reading and fiction, they read at different paces. And so I had to kind of come to terms with this double standard I had for myself. And then I had to get over this need for accountability. As I shifted toward this more off-road approach, I began to rethink the way I viewed accountability. I stopped viewing accountability as a gotcha game, but more as a chance for students to show their thinking. Accountability was more about transparency than it was about rewards or punishment. And this aligned more closely with the original notion of accountability as giving an account. If we think about the original root word of accountability, it's the notion of giving an account. It's really about transparency. When students moved at their own pace, I significantly reduced the amount of time that they spent working. So in other words, they were reading more, working less. That's an idea I explored a couple podcasts ago. As a tour guide, we had been in this constant stop and go process where students weren't able to develop reading fluency with informational texts. But when we went off-road, they had the time to engage in deep work and wrestle with ideas within the text. They also grew more engaged along the way. So that's the second idea. Let the students set their own pace. Now, I will say this. We will, by the way, on that second idea, we do need students to stop reading at times to summarize what they're reading or to engage in some retrieval practice, which is important. But the key thing there is to understand that retrieval practice doesn't have to be an assignment they do. They can summarize it in their mind. They can summarize it to a neighbor and do a quick pair share. Idea number three, empower students to ask their own questions. Instead of answering a set of predetermined questions, students can ask their own questions based upon their own curiosity. This might involve something like a larger inquiry-based learning mini project where they ask questions, spend a large block of time engaging in research, and ultimately share their findings with others. When I taught science, I had them come up with as many questions as they wanted. They just tons of different questions. And then from there, they engaged in research, reading a bunch of different informational texts, also looking at videos, and answering that question that they had. And it was based upon just their own curiosity. You might have them do an inquiry-based project where they begin with questions, engage in research, analyze data, maybe do an experiment along the way, and then they share their insights in a video or a podcast. One of my favorite examples of this that you'll hear me talk about often in this podcast is a Wonder Day project, and I love it because it lasts 1 to 2 class periods. It's not something that has to take weeks to accomplish. Idea number 4, the fourth way, is to empower students to choose the strategies as they read. When I took a tour guide approach to informational reading, I had the entire class use the same close reading approach. Now I want to say close reading isn't a bad thing. I want students to engage in close reading. But too often, close reading becomes a lockstep procedure rather than a flexible, malleable strategy. Students focus on whether they're doing the process right instead of thinking about the information in the text. I've seen students stare at a poster, worrying about what color they're supposed to use when highlighting a text, rather than thinking about the accuracy of the information or the bias of the source. By contrast, the off-road reading approach treats close reading as a strategy that students can use whenever they need it. It's also something that they can modify to fit their own needs. Similarly, we can encourage students to select which methods they want to use for gathering information during research. So the strategies they use, for example, in doing research could be note cards. Some might prefer note cards for the flexibility and the ability to like maneuver the information in a spatial form. Others might prefer sketch notes to process information in a way that's more web-like and visual. Still others might prefer graphic organizers or a spreadsheet, you know, a table where they put all the information in this table and they can search it later and kind of see what works for them. Meanwhile, others might prefer a neat and tidy binder with multiple tabs to organize the information. But the key idea is that there's a lot of different ways that students can engage in research, and we need to give them the freedom to choose their strategies. As they do that, they can engage in the curation process. And this is another area where they can be owning the process. This is where they find the information, analyze the information, collect information, organize the information, and share it out with their own unique lens. Number 5, empower students to select the tools. Explorers need tools. They need maps, blueprints, tutorials, and guides as they explore the new terrain. And similarly, when students go off-road, they're gonna need tools. They're gonna need supports. Whether it's an assistive technology or a set of accommodations, exceptional learners will need tools to navigate the terrain on their own. Similarly, English language learners will need things like sentence frames and front-loaded vocabulary and visuals to help navigate the language. But we can make all of these tools universally accessible for students, and they can learn how to self-select those tools whenever they need them. So as educators, we can make graphic organizers and tutorials, front-loaded vocabulary, sentence frames, all that stuff available to all students to use. Number 6, empower students to own the assessment process. If you're going to be off-road, you need to know where you're going, where you should be, and where to go next. And essentially, that's what you do when you engage in self-assessment, when you own the assessment process. There are a lot of different ways to do that. I'm not going to get into it now, but there's check marks and Likert scales. There's, surveys that they can do for self-assessment. There's reflections that they can complete. There's checklists that they can do. You can give them rubrics and have them self-assess with the rubrics on their own. There's a lot of different ways to do that. So I'm not going to spend too much time on that, but they can engage in that self-assessment. They can also engage in peer assessment, where they are giving advice to one another, structured feedback to one another. And I have a whole assessment toolkit you can check out if you want to, that has a lot of these different resources. Number 7, empower students to personalize their practice. So once they know where they're going and what standards they've mastered and where they need to improve, they can gain that sense of progression as they see themselves improve as they go on this off-road journey. This is why I love having students look at the standards to identify which areas they've mastered, which ones need improvement. And then before reading, students select 2 strategies that are strengths, 2 strategies that are a weakness, and then they work on their strength. You know, they continue to use their strengths, but they practice one of those two areas where they have been struggling. So they kind of hone in on two and continue to practice two strengths, but then they practice one area of weakness, and it's building intervention into this process. And so we can help them figure out which standards they're mastering. That's where we give feedback, one-on-one conferences, things like that. But the goal is to empower them to personalize their practice. Number eight, empower students to think critically. So going off-road is dangerous. Being on a tour is predictable. It's easy. We know where students are going. But the information landscape is pretty bad. It's pretty scary and pretty sketch. There's a proliferation of fake news and wild conspiracies out there. And as teachers, it's tempting to avoid the bad information by curating it all for the students. But if we want students to be good digital citizens, and by the way, this is an idea explored by Dr. Mattson in the last podcast I did. She did a phenomenal job taking a deep dive into this subject. We need to help them learn the habits and mindsets and skills involved in media literacy. And so the goal is to get students to engage in that critical reading process, to really think about what they're reading. Some of it could be doing things like a journalism project. Some of it could be, a structured process where they take a deep dive at, you know, the information that they're reading. But the goal is to get them to be critical consumers of what they read. Part of what I love, and we've talked about this on this podcast before, about having students do journalism projects, is I think that you become a better critical consumer when you are a creator, and you become a better creator when you are a critical consumer. Which leads to the ninth and final idea, empower students to solve problems. Outside of the classroom, one of the most common motives for seeking out an informational text is the desire to solve a problem. Too often, those students are simply answering text-dependent questions that are little more than just test comprehension. And they only look for, you know, did the student get it or not? And so the goal is to have students solve problems by finding information. This is the notion of integrating information problem solving, informational texts into things like a design thinking project or a project-based learning activity or an inquiry-based learning activity. So those are the nine key ideas. I want to end with just one last piece, which is that it really helps to lean into the librarians. The librarians are true experts in information literacy, digital citizenship, media literacy. They are the curators who know the information inside and out. And it's not so much that we want to be guides on the side. We want to be the guides on the ride. We want to be on the ride with students as they go off-road. And we want to kind of help teach them how to navigate those areas on their own. And that's where I think librarians are such an important factor in helping students navigate informational texts. And so I will just end by saying, please lean into your librarians. Please reach out to them. Please find them and see, you know, can we partner together and can you teach some information literacy lessons, and we'll co-teach together so students can go into that wilderness, the wild wilderness of information as explorers who will know what they're actually doing and who can think critically about the information as they navigate it and who can develop the mindsets and the thinking processes and the skills to be able to thrive when they are off-road. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you leave a review on wherever you get your podcast, whether it's Stitcher or if it's Spotify or if it's Apple Podcasts or wherever? Will you please leave a review? and tell people about this podcast. So again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.